And so with the Dance of the Goblins by Bazzini, played by probably one of the world's great flutists, Jean-Pierre Ampal, with Futaba Inoue on the piano, coming to a close this three-hour classical program. This has been your host, David Brown, and thank you for listening. And stay tuned to Brain Damage. But first, something about a radiothon that's be coming up very shortly. This is WUSB Stony Brook 90.1 on your FM stereo dial.
Hey, Kevin.
What?
I'm stuck on this last question. Leave me alone. What radio station has rock, jazz, bluegrass, rap, reggae, soul, oldies, blues, folk, polka, and classical music, along with telephone call-in shows, sports specials, live concerts, exclusive interviews, late-breaking and alternative news, school closings, and more free-form programs than any other station on Long Island?
If you don't know, you butthead, I'm not going to tell you.
Come on, that's not fair. I never knew there was a radio station that did all that. I mean, they've got everything.
There's one thing they don't have.
What's that?
Commercials.
No way. They've got to have commercials to make money.
They don't make money. They make radio shows. Nobody there gets paid.
Sounds neat. All that cool programming and no commercials.
Yeah, but they need help from their listeners. They got to buy a new transmitter because their old one's going to kill over.
That's terrible.
I know, but if everyone pulls together and sends them some money, they'll get a brand new transmitter and the signals will be better than ever.
Wow, I wish I could help.
You can. Every little bit counts.
Too bad I don't know the name of the radio station.
It's WUSB, okay? Long Island's first station of the 90s. There, are you happy?
Yeah. We're also in big trouble.
WUSB is one of the most unusual radio stations around. That's probably why you're listening to us. We want to stay original, make our signals stronger, and keep 90.1 FM commercial-free. It's important that you show your support during our one-week radiothon, beginning March 18th. With your help, WUSB will be able to get a new transmitter. For more information or to get involved, call 632-6498.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in...
Changed. The new number is 2. Please make a note of it.
Please repeat.
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Brain damage.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Five, four, three.
3, 3, 4, 4, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Did you say 9?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
If you do not push a key in 3 seconds, you will be disconnected.
Mein Bruder ist jünger als ich.
It's 8 minutes after 10 o'clock on Saturday night, the 4th of March. March 4th, it's a command. What a wonderful date that is. This is Eric Worley with you, doing another bit of brain damage up until midnight. And we've got all kinds of fun brain damagey type things to talk about, including a train strike. Oh, boy. There's few times in a man's life when you can say you have so much fun, you know, watching everybody squirm and deal with anarchy and all that kind of junk. Well, it's going to happen again. A federal judge just came in. Federal judge has reserved judgment, and when you're a judge, you can do that, has reserved judgment on whether to issue an order blocking sympathy strikes by railroad workers. So the worst part about strikes is having to say that. Ready to honor Eastern Airlines machinist picket lines. Now, I don't know about you folks, but I think it's incredible. 24 hours ago, nobody had any idea that this was even possible. All of a sudden, these machinists from Eastern Airlines go on strike, and we have to deal with the prospect of a train strike. Only in America, you know, that's what makes us such a wonderful country. Well, anyway, U.S. District Court Judge Robert Patterson, at 9:30 p.m., told lawyers for the Metropolitan Commuter Rail Lines and striking machinists that he would not make a decision tonight. New Jersey Transit and the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, the parent company for the Long Island Railroad and Metro North, had asked the judge to stop their workers from holding the sympathy strike on Monday morning. Such a strike would paralyze the metropolitan area. The judge advised the lawyers to come back tomorrow sometime after 10 a.m. to discuss the case further. Just any time after 10 a.m. when it was convenient. Don't worry about the millions of commuters who are going to be stranded in all kinds of interesting places. Oh, it's going to be a lot of fun. Train strike. Not since 2 years have we had a train strike. And we're not going to be the only ones. Metro North, New Jersey Transit, maybe even the subways will go out. And there's rumors that USB engineers will also be staging a sympathy strike because, you know, we're all in this together. And if you have a job, if you go to school, maybe you should consider being part of this whole thing. It's a way that you can participate in one of the few events that bring us all together. Let's take a look at the rest of the news, and then we're going to go someplace really special that I know you're going to love, and then we'll take some phone calls. Well, what's happening in the world? What's happening in the nation? Well, the same thing, the strike. Yes, most travelers with tickets on Eastern Airlines have been left scrambling for flights on other carriers. The machinist strike has virtually shut down the airline. Eastern had hoped at least 25% of its scheduled flights would go ahead as planned, but only 48 have taken off today as most pilots honor picket lines. An Eastern spokesman says the airline expects more of its pilots to return to work tomorrow, but the leader of the pilots' union is accusing Eastern of trying to give the false impression that labor is breaking ranks. Secretary of State James Baker will be spending 3 days in Vienna to help launch new East-West arms control talks. Baker will speak at the opening ceremonies Monday. Both sides will be starting over after 15 years of futile talks aimed at reducing non-nuclear forces in Central Europe. Baker will also be meeting with Soviet Foreign Minister Eduard Shevardnadze, however you pronounce that, to plan an upcoming visit to Moscow. Civil rights leader Jesse Jackson today began a 3-day fast to urge political unity in the upcoming contest for mayor of Chicago. Jackson's trying to bring together Mayor Eugene Sawyer, who lost the Democratic nomination, and independent candidate Timothy Evans. Jackson says unity would preserve the coalition formed by the late Chicago Mayor Harold Washington. Jesse Jackson was accused of racism today by a former Ku Klux Klansman. That's really fun to be accused of racism by a former Ku Klux Klansman, who recently won a state House seat in Louisiana, our old friend David Duke. Yes, he was in Chicago to address the right-wing Populist Party of America. Duke accused Jackson of racist politics and said affirmative action programs should be abolished. Asked to comment on Duke's remarks, Jackson would say only, "I don't think it's an American point of view." And speaking of the far right, neo-Nazi skinheads who showed up at a rally in California's Napa Valley found themselves outnumbered by 5 times as many counter-protesters. More than 500 demonstrators greeted the skinheads, many shouting, "Nazis go home." 200 police officers kept the groups apart. The event was originally billed as an Aryan Woodstock because organizers had hoped to have performances by skinhead bands. The nation of Laos isn't saying why it suddenly postponed a mission to find the remains of missing U.S. soldiers. A team of U.S. experts was to leave for Laos tomorrow. There's no word on whether the delay was prompted by a U.S. report that criticized Laos for allegedly failing to cooperate in the war on drugs. The report was released on Wednesday. And finally, the crowds are expected to be small tonight in FIFF, Alabama, F-Y-F-F-E. That's an amazing name. But in recent days, hundreds of people have been coming to the small town hoping to see a UFO. It all began February 10th when several people reported seeing strange lights in the sky. Wet weather is expected to put a damper on tonight's sky watching. Even UFOs have to deal with the weather. Well, our weather forecast is not here. There's no weather in the station tonight. We don't seem to have it. But we can tell you that it's 2 degrees Celsius and 36 on the Fahrenheit scale. And kind of cloudy outside, I guess, and dark. Maybe it's going to rain a little bit or something. It's always a possibility. One can always hope. It's, again, 2 degrees Celsius, 36 on the Fahrenheit scale at 15 minutes after 10 o'clock. And you may have also noticed that in addition to not having the weather, we didn't have Stardate tonight. Our Stardate tape is missing. That happens occasionally. So our apologies to all those people out there who are waiting to hear what was going on in the sky tonight. But it's cloudy anyway, so you wouldn't be able to see it. So not much to fret about. Now, we have a feature that I dug up. I get tapes from all over the place sometimes, and this week I got some tapes from the Republic of South Africa, a wonderful little place that is, and the interview that you are about to hear is of particular interest to those of you who have a very negative point of view of the world. I'd like for those people who call this show on a regular basis to listen and to see just how pessimists really really view the world. This guy we're going to listen to is not a real pessimist. He's kind of, let's see, we've got some literature on him. He's perhaps best known, I don't think they're going to say these exact words, but I'll say them anyway, perhaps best known for his paintings of elephants all over Africa. David Shepherd is also famous for his English country scenes and his depictions of steam locomotives, his great love after the pachyderms. During one of his frequent visits to Africa, Shepherd spoke to Dave Holt Biddle, who asked him just when it was that he painted his first elephant. And then you'll hear him say, in 1960, after a very dot, 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 and then the whole thing will start. He talks about various things, including a view on AIDS, which I think is, well, startling, to say the least. Keep in mind, this is coming from South Africa. And there's more than a few things we can say about that. And we'll be talking about it afterwards. We'll be talking about other things afterwards. We'll be looking forward to the strike. Our phone number is 632-6901. We'll be taking calls in just a little while. Now, you're going to hear something that's completely unrelated to what we're about to do for about 30 seconds, and there's a reason for this. The tape that I have to play is in a different studio, so I can't just stop talking and turn on the tape because I have to stop talking, get up, open the door, go out, open a few more doors, go into the other studio and press the button. And if I was to just stop talking and do that, you'd hear a lot of silence. So we have what we call a buffer segment. No, that's okay, I can do it. Now, people are lining up, waving, saying they'll do it for me. No, it's okay. I must do this, my program. I have to handle all aspects of it. I appreciate it, though. We are going to play as a special buffer a public service announcement. Public service announcements are things that are designed to make your life easier and better and, you know, all that kind of thing. This one has a title. It's called Leave Your Car. Now, you've probably heard it before if you listen to this radio station. It concerns a gentleman who has had a bit too much to drink. And his friends, or one friend in particular, is trying to get him not to drive his car home. He just lives a few miles away, but he thinks he can make it. He hasn't had that much to drink, and, you know, it's he knows the way and that kind of thing. So his friend is trying to convince him to take the taxi instead. And I've always had a problem with this particular one because in real life, nobody would agree that readily within 30 seconds. You would have a big knockdown fight about the thing, you know? You're like questioning the guy's masculinity, saying he can't drive home. So I'd like to talk about that later, too. If anyone thinks this is a realistic depiction of life as we know it, please give me a call, because I don't think so. Anyway, we're going to hear this exciting 30-second public service announcement. That will be followed by the direct tape, which came straight to me from South Africa. Ooh, what a scary voyage that was, over the ocean and up the coast, I guess. It's here. It's in our tape machine in the other studio. I'm going to run in there and turn it on, and you will hear it direct over your radio. Here on Brain Damage, WUSB in Stony Brook. And now the exciting public service announcement.
Well, tell me, this place is closing. Can I give you a lift home?
You've had a lot to drink, Bernie. You shouldn't be driving anybody home, including yourself. Why don't you leave your car where it is tonight and pick it up tomorrow when you're in a little better shape?
Hey, I'm fine. And besides, it's just a few miles, so I can make it.
Bernie, your car will be here in the morning. But if you try to drive it home tonight, you might not be. Get my point?
Maybe you're right. Would you call me a cab, okay? Thanks. See you.
This sobering message is brought to you by the American College of Surgeons.
Global News Services. The World of Nature. World-renowned British wildlife artist and conservationist David Shepherd. Perhaps best known for his paintings of elephants all over Africa, David Shepherd is also famous for his English country scenes and his depictions of steam locomotives, his great love after the pachyderms. During one of his frequent visits to Africa, Shepherd spoke to Dave Holt Biddle, who asked him just when it was that he painted his first elephant.
In 1960, after a very sort of average career. In fact, my career to start with was a series of disasters, one after another, because I wanted to be a game warden in Africa, and that was a disaster. They told me I was useless. And then I decided that rather than drive a bus for a living, I'd try and starve as an artist, because all artists are supposed to starve, but I thought that was better than driving a bus. And that was a near disaster as well, because I entered for training to the Slade School of Art in London and promptly failed their entrance examination. They said I was untrainable. And it was purely by meeting the man who trained me, my tutor. All my success is due to him. And in 1960, I first painted an elephant picture for the Royal Air Force, in fact, because I was painting aeroplanes. And they flew me to Kenya when the British were still there as their guest, the Royal Air Force guest. And they said, we don't want pictures of aeroplanes for the officers' mess in Nairobi. We'd rather have a picture of an elephant. Do you do elephants? And I said, no, but I'll have a try. And that changed my life overnight.
And that was the beginning of your love affair with Africa?
Absolutely. It was the beginning of my, what I'm proud to say, my great success story, because it is a success story. It all began from painting elephants. And my love and passion for conservation, not just Africa, of course, because, you know, there's wildlife in other places as well. India has some fabulous wildlife and glorious national parks. There's a tendency, I think, little overdone, to think that you've got to go to Africa to see wildlife, and you don't. There are plenty of other countries. But Africa, of course, is the, I suppose, the main place, yes.
Yes, of course, you mentioned India. There's a great deal in India. Other parts of the world where you've worked?
In Arabia. I've just done 6 television films for Thames Television in England, and we went to Muscat in Oman to see the Arabian oryx in the wild. Just 41 of them in the wild, that's all. Living in an area 7,000 square kilometres.
I'm happy to be able to tell you that we're actually breeding them in South Africa.
I know you are. That's why I saw the glint in your eye. You prompted me. Yeah, well, you see, the Arabian oryx is the great success story in conservation, because I was in Arabia, funnily enough, in 1960. On that same visit, when I was with the RAF in Kenya, painting elephants, I also went up into the East Aden Protectorate, where at that time it was reckoned there were 13 Arabian oryx left in the wild. 13, and 5 were dart-gunned, and the RAF took them away in safety to Phoenix Zoo in Arizona and San Diego Wildlife Park, where from those 5, we now have nearly 300 Arabian oryx, and they've now been put back into the wild.
So organisations like the RAF, in fact, are quite heavily involved in conservation.
Well, they were in those days, and now, of course, yes, a great many organisations throughout the world, service and civilian, and corporations and companies, are all beginning at last to wake up to the need for conservation, because I say no less a stronger statement, as conservation, I believe, is the most important singular issue of any. Now, people say, gosh, well, what do you mean? I mean, what about cancer relief and all these other charities which must be urgent for man's benefit? And I say, well, conservation encompasses all those things, including cancer relief, if you stop to think about it, because we're destroying 200 acres of rainforest a minute, every minute. Now, in those rainforests which we're destroying at 200 acres a minute, there could easily be a plant totally unknown to science which could be a cure for cancer. That's not going over the top. It is a fact that there are plants in those rainforests which are unknown to science.
So you take very much a holistic view of conservation.
Yes, I do. You see, I've learned so much since the day when I painted that elephant picture in 1960. And on that same visit to Kenya, I saw the 255 dead zebra lying on the ground that had been poisoned from a water hole. When you've seen that sort of horror, you know, at the same moment that your career is taking off beneficially, you know, to me, through wildlife, you obviously want to do something about it. And since that day, 28 years ago, when I saw that, I've learned, because I'm not an ecologist, I'm not a scientist, I've never taken a degree in biology. I'm just a very emotional artist who owes his entire success to the wildlife he paints. And so I listen, and I meet scientists and ecologists all over the world who have convinced me now that conservation in one short sentence is simply a matter of saving this lovely little planet we sit on, the only world we've got, which we share with all living creatures, and they share it with us. Man has that arrogant assumption that he owns the world to do what he likes with it, and if we follow that course, it's a self-destruct course.
No, specifically you're in Southern Africa this time with the Karkafort project.
Yes.
And now you've mentioned the Arabian oryx as being a success story, and one of the few success stories in Africa has been the saving of the black rhino.
Yes.
In the Karkafort.
Right.
And this has been because of the involvement of local people.
Absolutely.
And people like yourself.
Well, it's only people like myself, generous of you to say that, who are privileged to be able to sort of spearhead it and be the sort of front man in publicity, if you like. But I don't matter. It's the people who live with the wildlife. And I mentioned, for example, just now the Thames television programmes I've just done, and that came to the fore again, this very point. We were in India, filming in Ranthambore National Park near Jaipur, which is the, I have to say, the most spectacularly beautiful park I've ever been to. It was different somehow. Karkafort was lovely in its own way too, of course, equal probably, but this lovely 150 square mile national park full of lakes and lush vegetation, trees, perfect, a nature paradise, masses of game, 44 tigers, just paradise. And we stepped 100 yards outside that park and we filmed. The contrast, there wasn't a blade of grass or a leaf on a tree. It was a desert. Why? Because of the people problem. We all know in India the awesome overpopulation problem. There's no room to sit down in India, there's so many people. And we met the villagers just outside that park who said to me, "It's all very well you chaps coming from England with your fancy TV cameras and making films about our national park. It doesn't benefit us. We don't get any income from this. Those tigers are doing nothing for us at all. That national park isn't helping us. We're not getting any benefit from it. So we want that park for our cattle, because our cattle are dying by the day because they've got nothing to eat." Now, that's the message, that unless the parks in Africa or India or wherever, in other words, wildlife, can be of immediate commercial benefit to the people who live with it, then forget it, we can go home.
I think, happily, here in Southern Africa, there is a very definite move in that direction, that people must become involved in national parks, wilderness areas, that sort of thing. And I think there's a tremendous realization here in Southern Africa that it's got to be that way, otherwise conservation is going to fail.
You've led the world in this, and I do wish people, when they criticise South Africa for just about every reason in the book, you know, I just wish that people thought for a moment and learned and listened to people like you saying that, because I say it too, exactly. When I was in the Karkafort last November doing the research for my painting, I went out with Garth Owen-Smith and all these other, Blythe Lutie and these wonderful people who were living in the bush, saving the rhino, knowing every rhino by name, you know, and they're doing the work in the field, grassroots level, and they showed me the involvement with the local people, the local tribal people, who are being taught to realise the value of that wildlife. It's more valuable to them live than it is dead, so stop the bloody poaching. You're winning in the Karkafort. I was doing a big talk in Birmingham about 2 weeks ago, and getting passionately outspoken about what's happening to the poor old rhino, extinct in 3 years, quite possibly, because of these merciless people who will make money out of rhino horn. And a woman came up to me in the interval, and she said, "Now, come on, now, David, give me an honest answer. Does it matter if there are no more rhino?" And I said, "No," because I wanted her to listen. If I said, "Yes, of course it does," she'd have walked out of the exit, and I'd have lost her. So I wanted her to listen. So I said, "No," and she did. She stopped in her tracks. She said, "Well, what do you mean it doesn't matter? You've just said it does." "No, I'm saying it doesn't matter one jot. You've asked me the question. It doesn't affect you here in Birmingham if there are no more rhinos in Africa, for the reason that you can go to Waitrose or Sainsbury's tomorrow or whatever the supermarket's called and buy your cornflakes. You can watch Dallas on television. It's not going to make the slightest difference to your daily life. But..." Now, of course, the "but" is the word, because I'd held her attention, and now the tough part began, you know, to try and convince her somehow that it does matter in the longer term, because simply if we destroy a species every day of the year, which man does, this arrogant, dangerous animal, and the rhino is just another species, it's just another one, the elephant will be the next, quite possibly, or it may be an orchid in Thailand or a tree in Burma, it's all the same, it doesn't matter, or an insect, which I've never even heard of. It's all part of the destructive course that man is taking, destroying everything around him until the point where, God forbid, we'd have destroyed everything around us, and we can't survive on this earth having destroyed everything around us. It's unthinkable.
You used the term, a people problem. It is a people problem. Isn't that perhaps where conservationists should start to address the source of the problem? Because after all, it's the population expansion, the human population expansion, which is driving the animals from their natural areas, which is destroying the natural areas. Once again, you mentioned the rainforest.
Absolutely. It's the birth control, actually. Everything comes down to the fact that I said earlier that we can't make the world any bigger. And we're breeding too fast. It's as simple as that, if you want to get down to basics. And that might get me onto religion and all sorts of other things, yes. Because religious dogma, I believe, is responsible very largely for this. And you know, I probably am sticking my neck out saying this, but I'm saying it. I think it's time we got rid of some of this old-fashioned religious dogma and started preaching birth control throughout the world, particularly in the emergent countries, the third world. Because nature always wins. You cannot take nature on. Nature will win in the end. And I believe, in fact, that nature is already beginning to sort us out. Nature is saying, you know, we've got to sort those stupid people out down there. You know, or something is happening by introducing, for example, a thing like AIDS. Now, I've not said this many times on the media, but I'm saying it because I believe it. I don't know, but something up there is introducing a thing like AIDS. It's a repeat of the, if you like, the plague in London, the Black Death. It's happening again. And on the survival of the fittest syndrome, which you cannot combat, it's nature. Nature says the survival of the fittest. And it's AIDS is going to go through Africa and other countries and sort out untold thousands of people. This is a tragedy of untold dimensions, but you cannot combat it. It's nature, I believe, saying there are too many people, we've got to sort them out. And on the survival of the fittest syndrome, it's going to be the third world that suffers the most. And that is a tragedy of untold proportions, but you can't fight it. We can't do anything about it. We're trying to, okay, find a cure for AIDS, and in many ways, of course, we should do. But some people would say it's making it worse.
But, of course, then, when you talk about fewer people means a better quality of life for the survivors. And that, surely, is what we should be aiming at as well.
Well, that is the survival of the fittest syndrome, isn't it? I'm not saying that's right or wrong. It's nature. And you cannot fight nature. We're getting much deeper into this conversation than I've ever got before. And I'm probably sticking my neck out. But, you know, I do feel it. And I'm being honest. I'm expressing my views.
But these are fundamental problems.
And it's amazing the number of ecologists who agree with me when I start talking about AIDS. You see, let's take another example of this. Bob Geldof went to Ethiopia and raised those millions to try and solve that awful problem of all those people dying in Ethiopia. 7 million people were threatened with starvation, or some horrendous number. Bob Geldof deserved every medal he got for doing that. But I have a feeling that if you asked him if he'd do it again, I wonder if he'd say, no way. Simply because, unless you at the same time teach them birth control and to conserve the landscape, stop cutting the trees down, which in turn creates a desert so they don't grow any crops, they can't grow any crops, you're making it worse. And in 10 years, 15 years' time, Bob Geldof may go out again and try and save 20 million people from dying, and then another 50 years, you'll go out and save another 50 million. And you are making the matter worse.
Now, Bob Geldof raised millions for the starving in Ethiopia. You, over the years, have raised millions for conservation. Do you think you're doing your bit?
Well, I'd like to think I am, yes. I mean, people ask me, what is your honest gut feeling, David? Do you think it's a waste of time? I can't answer that, because if I said, yes, it is a waste of time over the media, I would simply be spreading doom and gloom, which I don't want to.
And you wouldn't be able to live with yourself either.
And I wouldn't live. No, right. I mean, well, it would be a waste of time, and I give up. I mean, conservation's taking over my life. But it's nice, this, actually. I'll give you an honest answer. Up till about a year ago, I did honestly have a gut feeling that it was a complete waste of time. I just believe that we're fighting a losing battle. I sometimes still think that. But I don't all the time think that now, because in the last 6 months in Britain, for instance, on the radio, every morning now we're hearing about the ozone layer. We're hearing about the danger from aerosols. We're hearing about the tropical rainforests almost every day. Now, particularly the ozone layer, for instance, we never heard about the ozone layer a year ago. I didn't even know what it was. Now it's on everybody's lips. And thank God it is, because that is a dramatic example of what man is doing to this fragile little planet. Poaching rhinos is just one infinitesimal example of it. It's not infinitesimal for the rhino. My God, it's a desperate state of affairs. But it's just one small part of it. And this is why what I've learned so much in the last 12 months, you know, that conservation is now, as I said before, the most important issue, because it's our own survival we're talking about. So it must be important.
And there we end this week's edition of The World of Nature, presented by Colin Flaxman and brought to you by Global News Services.
Where did they get this music? Wow. Well, there you have it. Direct from South Africa to the USB studios. From the Global News Services. And that was an interview with world-renowned British wildlife artist and conservationist David Shepherd. I wonder how many people in this country have heard of him. I'm not an expert, so he may be a world superstar for all I know. A lot of what he said I thought was very astute, but some of it also reflects the attitude in South Africa where people aren't really looked upon with all that much respect, to put it mildly. The views on AIDS, I don't know. I just to look upon it as if it's something that God has sent us to weed us out, I have a lot of difficulty with that because it's a good excuse for not doing anything at all about it. And many agencies and governments have been accused of just that. I'd like to hear your opinions. 632-6901. We've got a lot of other things to go to. But this is what we're talking about at the moment. So give us a call, 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi, Eric. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
Fine.
Do you have a comment on what you heard?
Yeah, I do. I really don't think it's a thing sent from God, AIDS. I really don't.
You don't think it's sent by God?
No, I don't. Not at all.
So what do you think the best way to deal with it is, then? What should we be doing?
I really don't know. I just think more research should be going into this.
Uh-huh.
AIDS. And that, I don't know. I think more doctors and more money. They should have more fundraisers and stuff to get more money to find out more about AIDS. Where, how it really evolved, you know, where it really came from. Because they're saying it was bought by some lady in Africa, you know, like they just said.
But right.
I really don't know much about it, you know.
See, the way this person presented the whole thing, it's the ignorant people in third world countries that are multiplying beyond belief. You know, this something has to be done to control it. When you look upon it in that way, when you think of the teeming masses that are messing everything up for the whole planet, you can't help but think, yeah, I guess that makes sense. You know, we got to weed out the human race somehow, or else we're all going to perish as a result. So AIDS is a good thing. That's what it leads to, I think.
I don't think it's good either. Anyway, I don't think that's just the way to wipe out the population.
Uh huh.
Not at all. I mean, you're saying that, you know, they were saying that third world people are less intelligent than, you know, like the U.S. or something like that, but. That's not true, because look at all the stuff that they've done, you know?
Yeah, I mean, who is it that's responsible for the ozone layer and for garbage barges and things like that? You know, a large part of that lies right in this country, and we're not a third world country at all.
Yeah, most of it, like around New York, like the big cities, you know, New York and
mm-hmm.
big cities like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's many groups of people that would say, well, New York should be eliminated a bit, you know. Some people should be wiped out of there. We'd some of us out. Now, I don't think we'd go for that too much. I don't think we should be preaching that to other people either. Thanks very much for your call. Where are you calling from?
Sound Beach.
Okay, we'll keep listening.
Okay, bye-bye.
632-6901. Program is Brain Damage. Good evening. You're on the air.
Oh, yes. Eric, this is Sammy.
Hi, Sammy. How are you?
It's good. I've been back. I've been back from Florida just very recently.
Well, that's good. How was Florida?
Well, Florida had a lot of the conservation problems.
Uh-huh.
Because there's no water. They're overpopulated. There's no, the wells are bad. They even got radon in the basement. And they don't have basements in Florida.
That's something. That's something else. Florida is getting really crowded.
Yes, and they overstressing the land.
Any solutions in sight, Sammy?
No, none at all. And they're all worried about it because they're having garbage problems down there like we had 10 years ago, before the politicians took over and made it 10 times as worth it.
Uh huh. So they're nowhere near where we are now, then.
But where they're getting close. It just seems like we just recently got to the point where. We're recycling the cans and the bottles and the garbage. Down in Florida, they're doing it already. So uh-huh. they always was behind us.
Uh-huh.
It seems that they're right up there now.
Well, now, Sammy, you open the newspapers. Do you hear about the ozone layer every day?
No. I never heard about that.
You don't hear about the ozone layer, huh?
No. Where's the ozone?
Ozone is that wonderful protective... shield, you might say, above the Earth that protects us.
Higher than the twilight zone?
What? No. The ozone layer, not the twilight zone.
Okay.
Protects us from all kinds of ultraviolet rays and slowly being eaten away by pollutants.
From the aerosol cans and armpit stuff.
Yeah, well, that stuff isn't around anymore, but we still have air conditioners and...
It's like a give and take, Eric. If you want to have smelly neighbors, don't use armpit stuff, then you're going to have no ozone.
Well, you know, it's something maybe we would get used to, but I don't think that's the problem. I think we solved the deodorant problem. We don't have aerosols anymore, you know, and we've lived through that. But there's other things we have to do.
You haven't lived where I have lived. I wouldn't want my neighbors not using it.
Yes. Any other comments, Sammy?
No, but it's good to be back.
Okay, good to have you back.
Okay, have a good time, Eric.
You too. 632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Quiet on the set. It's the know-all, see-all, do-all of radio. Oh, boys and girls, it's Mr. Radio. Get out the cassette recorders, quadraphonic receivers, 8-track...
Folks, we have a lot of open lines. Please call in, 632-6901.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hi, Derek. I've taken my sabbatical. I've been gone from your station for about 6 weeks because I'm protesting your...
Oh, I get it. A sympathy strike with the Eastern Airlines. Well, that's commendable. Everyone's doing it.
No, I am protesting your facial hair because you don't shave. I want you to shave your facial hair. That guy Jim from Central Islip, that's his name, right?
I'm not commenting.
Well, who's that guy that from Central Islip who always calls and voices his confidence in me?
We don't give out names on this program.
I think it's Jim from Central Islip. He convinced me to come back. I heard him last night, last weekend, saying, "Where? What happened to Mr. Radio?" So, you know, to my fans, you know, I miss you people. You're beautiful. Stiltskin, let me say something about Stiltskin. Here's a man who's fighting.
And he's going to continue talking on hold. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hello?
Yes. Hello, someone there.
Down, down, down. Plunge into the depth of despair. It's Big Jim Doomsayer.
Well. Now, what did you think of all that pessimism we were airing?
Hey, well, let me say hello to Mr. Radio. Hello, Mr. Radio.
Well, you can say goodbye to him. He just hung up.
At least you gave him a chance to talk today.
Yes. I'll have to live with that.
That was great, that tape. I couldn't believe it. I was totally freaking out.
Well, now, did that person say what you agree with, especially about AIDS?
I missed some of it, but you would have to, you know, there's some Christian people running around this planet that think that AIDS was put here by God because...
Well, it's not just Christians. It's fundamentalists of all religions seem to have
that
view.
I'll get to that. The thing is, I don't believe that. But the thing is, because you got to look at, like, the Black Plague of 1861 that wiped out thousands and thousands of people in England. I mean, they weren't... That had nothing to do with illicit sex, you know, if you get my point.
Right.
So that's you know, fundamental maniacs making statements like that. However, if you take the Gaia hypothesis and put that into the equation here, you could think of AIDS as sort of nature putting a balance back.
Yes, but you could think that of anything. I mean, there's something that we don't have the knowledge to solve. You say it's God's work, God's will, and it's an easy way out, but it doesn't really solve anything.
But people, listen, Eric, you can play this stuff that you played on the radio till you're blue in the face, just like I talk about it, you know, and people. They don't. They say, "Well, what's one more? What's one more?" And you got billions of people saying that now. It's just like me with my car. I keep all the pollution devices on it. Some people say, "Oh, well, why don't you take it off? You'll get better performance." itself is an organism. You know, everything is really, like, for instance, the atmosphere is, the temperature has been controlled by gases that bacteria give off. But now if you take the Gaia hypothesis for face value and say, okay, well, these bacteria are sacrificing themselves for the good of the planet, I don't believe that. Some people do. Now then, that's where you could say that AIDS is like the Earth created AIDS to keep itself from destructing itself, you know, because like the guy said, there's definitely, like I keep saying, you know, it's just too many people doing too many things, but they don't know any better. They're only doing what they know how to do. We're smart, but we're not that smart. We're smart, but we're not smart enough. Like, even you're against Shoreham, but, you know, what are you going to do? Burn more fossil fuel? What are you going to do? I mean, Shoreham's just a little nothing on this planet. That's not going to hurt anything. You know, it's not going to hurt much at all.
Well, I'm not going to get into the Shoreham argument again, because it's been 10 years of bitter arguing back and forth with me and many people about that, and I don't want to get into it anymore.
Yeah, that's what this...
The problem with the whole AIDS thing is... You know, if you believe that, if you believe it's something that's sent to weed us out, then where is the motivation to do anything about it?
Well, I don't believe that anyway. I don't believe that at all, because any virus, any microbiologist I've talked to, and from what I've read, I understand that any virus that...
I hope that's not a Shoreham siren, is it?
No, that's just the fire.
Okay.
You see, the thing is, any virus... From what I understand, you know, there might be microbiologists out there that hear what I'm saying, and they may disagree or say, well, where does this guy get his information from? So I'll just try and say it the way I understand it. Viruses, they're just like any other form of life on the planet. They evolve. Now, there was a thing. Remember they had all those rabbits in Australia, I think it was? They were ruining the crops and everything. They introduced them to... for a sport, and then they just overpopulated all over the place and started ruining crops, and they couldn't control them, so they introduced a virus to try and kill off the rabbits. But the thing is, the virus, it didn't kill all the rabbits, because the virus itself mutated.
Uh-huh.
Because, you see, the virus, if it kills all the hosts, it can't survive.
Okay.
It would eventually... It would mutate so that it didn't kill, because if a virus kills all its hosts, it can't survive.
So what eventually happened?
To the rabbits? You know what did? Let me think for a minute. I'm always under pressure on the radio. It's hard to...
Well, I'm more curious about the virus.
Hmm?
I'm actually more curious about what happened to the virus.
Virus? Well, the virus mutated to a less potent strain where it didn't kill all the rabbits anymore. That's what I understand, if I read correctly and remember all of what I read. But that was a real problem down there with the rabbits. Were eating the farmland up. They were wrecking the place. And so they I don't know whether it was a biologist already or what, it had introduced a virus and it was killing them like crazy, and then it stopped. But I really don't know what the eventual outcome was, how they got the rabbits under control. But you can see...
Well, now, how does this tie into AIDS?
Well, AIDS would probably eventually... See, I don't know. You see, now I'm not C. Everett Koop. You know, I really don't know what the potency of this thing is, but I'm sure it's like any other form of life. It's gonna mutate. It's mutating all the time. It could mutate.
Well, there's already several strains of it. There's HIV-1, there's HIV-2. I'm not sure if there's any others, but they are different. They have the same basic effect. I think one shows up a bit more often than people who have been
exposed.
It's not
going to kill the whole planet. It's not going to kill everybody.
Well, now, I don't know how you can be so sure about that. Why wouldn't it kill a lot of people?
It probably will kill a lot of people.
Well, why wouldn't it kill... If left uncontrolled, why wouldn't it kill a majority of the planet?
Well, how is it going to do that? I mean, what about fidelity in a relationship? How are you going to get it? How am I going to get it? You know, I pretty much, you know, don't fool around. I don't fool around at all. Well, we shouldn't get too personal over the air, but maybe, for all I know right now, I could have it. I haven't been checked. I could.
Well, you know, there's there's more than one way to get it. You don't have to be homosexual to get it. You don't have to be a drug user.
You can get it in a heterosexual relationship.
Right. In Africa, it's being spread back and forth between male and female very frequently. It's nobody really understands why that is. Why in Africa at this point, it seems to be much more contagious, I guess is the word, than it is over here.
David, did you get his point? Like, you see, I'm sorry that I missed part of that interview. I'm upset about that because that was really good. I really missed. Like, what was he saying? He was saying that it. Well, I heard him say something about. I've said this. I said helping the people is only making the problem worse because the people you're helping are only going to multiply, and then.
Well, there was one part in particular that really kind of irked me, where he was talking about Bob Geldof and saying that, well, next year maybe he'll go and save 20 million more people, then the year after that 50 million, and he'll just make the problem worse. And somehow that just seems so callous to think of it in that way. You know, you're going out saving lives, but you're not supposed to save lives, apparently. You're supposed to just let them die so that the planet will be okay.
Well, you know, there's a way you could look at that, but it's hard. You have to really sit down and meditate on that. You can't just if you think about what you're saying, then if you think about what he said, you would be taking nature in its most pure form.
Right, but you know, he stopped looking upon human beings as human beings.
Yeah, I know we are human beings, but we
I mean, these are 50 million people that are alive right now that are like us that have thoughts
and feelings.
I would help them
because I just have compassion. That's a problem that we have. We have this compassion problem.
Well, I don't know where compassion could actually be proven to have been one of our major problems. I think compassion is probably the saving grace of the human race.
It is good, but it got us where we are because. It helped make it the large scale population that he was talking about. It helped get it there because we helped the handicapped and the people that can't see and the people that can't hear and the old this and that. Animals don't do that. Animals, you know, they're pretty much out for themselves, and that's that. If a lion can't see, that's it. It's dead. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can't live that way, but we should use our brains then. Besides just using this compassion, start using our brains.
Right. Well, I think there's a way out if we use our brains and not just sit back and wait for nature to eliminate everybody that's undesirable.
But you're smart. But
there's a difference. There's a difference between that and fighting nature. You know, I mean, it's true what he said. You can never fight nature and expect to win. But I don't look upon this as a battle with nature. I look upon this as a challenge to our intellect to find a cure for this and advance onwards, because I'm sure we're going to find things that are related to AIDS in the future that we can't possibly overcome unless we have the knowledge to overcome this. It's kind of a stepping stone, a computer adventure game, you might say.
We're doing pretty good with it now. I mean, with the...
Not as good as we should be.
No,
with
I
all
mean,
the
that,
resources and money that we
problem.
Have...
You shouldn't say that because, I mean, we really don't know that much anyway about, you know, a virus is small and there's a lot of things.
Well, I'm referring to the lack of funds that are being channeled into this.
Yeah, but maybe let's say that there were a lot. Look at all the funds that went into cancer and still cancer. So look at cancer.
Well, I mean, there have been a lot of advances made in cancer research. There's not nearly enough funds going there either. And I think it's pathetic when we pour so much money into military.
People
but
don't anyway. They could help make cancer much less by not smoking and not going in the sun so much and not eating certain foods. But they don't listen. And then people blame it on the doctors. Well, why don't these people that are studying this figure out a way to stop this cancer? You know, just everybody takes the responsibility away from themselves. Just like I say about the overpopulation. Someday it's just going to get so bad and things aren't going to be available. People are going to go to the store and they're not going to be able to get the things they want. And they're going to blame it on the government. And,
mm-hmm.
and the government's not to blame. Everybody's to blame.
Well, we all have to take responsibility, and that's a good point.
Everybody wants to get away from the responsibility. I see that all the time. Just like the AIDS thing. Just try and have fidelity in a relationship, which seems almost impossible these days. Every time I meet a nice girl, I find out that I'm just her playmate. You know, I mean, she's got another guy tucked away somewhere, and And here I am thinking I got something going with this girl, and so for all I know, I could have it. I haven't been tested, but, you know, I've gone out with girls, and then I find out she's married, and her husband's in jail right now, and I knew nothing of it, and here we are going out and getting intimate. I mean, it's a crazy world today.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to have major effects on our psychological well-being, having to constantly worry about
I don't think that AIDS is really as bad as I don't think it's going to kill that many people, really.
Well, it's already killed 50,000 in this country. That's...
what about alcoholism and cigarettes? I mean, we're talking infinitesimal here.
Yeah, but that's something that I look upon as a personal choice. You choose to start smoking cigarettes. You choose to start drinking. Nobody asked for AIDS.
That's true.
And a lot of people are being exposed to it without knowing it.
Well, it's not going to... Yeah, but I don't think it's going to... What you're saying, I'm getting the idea from you that the ultimate thing is it's going to wipe out the human race.
No, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying it's a major threat. And just because it's afflicting people that in this day and age are looked upon as undesirable, people in Africa, drug users, homosexuals, that's going to catch up to us, I think. And
not transmittable, like when you sneeze in a room and I catch you cold. It's not that kind of rhinovirus or whatever it is that they call it. The virus is delicate or something.
But what if it was? What if you could catch AIDS?
Well, you read that book by Stephen King, The Stand.
No, I didn't. But I'm just curious. If suddenly it was possible, if another strain of AIDS developed where it was possible to catch it through airborne transmission, I'd like to see how many people would sit back and say, "Oh, it's just something God sent to wipe out the earth. Nothing to worry about," you know.
Well, it's an interesting scenario.
Cut down on the population a bit.
The book was great, The Stand by Stephen King. That book was sort of like what's happening now with AIDS. But it's more your scenario. I would read that book if I was you. I think you'll like that. It's about this in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It's because he writes a lot of those science fiction novels. But that one was a science fiction novel. Well, he writes horror stories. I shouldn't say science fiction. His horror story, The Stand, is something that you would be able to relate to in your scenario. You ought to read that if you get the time. The Stand by Stephen King. Now that book says just what you said, but puts it into a story, and it was pretty scary. People dying all over the place, people walking over dead bodies, society, there's no more society.
Well, it's something that's happened in the past with various plagues, and...
Well, you see, AIDS, I don't think AIDS is really that bad. Maybe I'm just thick-headed or something. I don't think it's as bad as the Black Plague back in 1861 or whatever it was in England.
Yes, but we have the ability to use some foresight here and to say this has very ominous implications. The rate at which this disease is growing indicates that it's going to be a very major problem within a matter of 10 years if nothing is done.
10 years. Well, wait,
or if little is done.
So, why does that? What? Same for me. What that thing that the he said in the interview that irks you about? Nothing should be done about it. Can you relate to what he said? I mean, I don't agree with him, but I can relate to what he said. Can you relate to that? Can you understand?
I can relate to what he said about it being a wasted effort to save 50 million people. Only if I look upon those 50 million people as ignorant blotches on the earth. But I find it very hard to do that. These are 50 million human beings.
Made a good point about educating them.
I understand his point. I just I think it's kind of callous to look upon it in that way. There should be another way to try to deal with the problem.
Yeah, but
teaching birth control, overriding the religious dogma that says you have to prosper and be fruitful and all that kind of thing.
Well, you see, you're a smart, educated person on the planet, but most people don't think like you do, and you're going to suffer for their consequences just like he is. And I think that's what he's trying to say. You have to live on the same spaceship that they live on, and they're messing up the spaceship.
Uh-huh. Well,
they're not the only people
messing up the spaceship. And if you know, everybody did their part to a degree, every culture did their part, there would only be a few people messing up the spaceship, and it wouldn't be nearly as bad as it is now.
Well, like you said a couple of shows ago about nations starting to get together and talk. I remember you saying that it seems like we're moving in the direction that you would like, because we do see that there's a problem and we do have to get together, and things are moving in that direction.
Yeah, and I think you can draw a parallel between the AIDS crisis and the crisis that the whole planet is facing with all this pollution and the ozone reduction and all that kind of thing. We see something that we can't really tell in everyday life that it's that bad now, but come 20 years, 40 years from now, we could be facing a real major problem for the whole race.
But I think I don't think it's going to be the way you think people are going to die off from AIDS. I think we're just going to die off from just too much poison in the atmosphere. People are already dying from that in Mexico City because there's so many people that run cars and stuff that they're choking from the pollution. You don't see it, but it's happening. If you were around it, you would, like Long Island. I see Long Island is overcrowded. But you tell somebody who lives out in the country that the world's overpopulated, and they'll laugh at you. But the thing is, they're affected by it because it's their atmosphere that flows over their area.
Quite true. Listen, I'm going to get some more calls. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, take care, Eric.
All right, 632-6901. Talking about worldly events. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hi, it's Andrew Goldberger.
Hello, Andrew.
Hi, I have a horrible cold.
You have a horrible cold?
Yes.
Wow, that's horrible.
So you're talking about AIDS?
Looks like it, yeah. Well, among other things.
Well, we're learning about this in science. And, we're learning about viruses and cells. And I found out that each cell of a virus separates and goes to each regular cell in your body. And it stays there till the cell blows up.
Mm-hmm.
And so once all your cells blow up in your immune system, then you have AIDS.
Well, it defeats the immunological system.
Yeah, and just about everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a very sophisticated virus. It's
I know.
It's hitting the system like nothing has ever done before. Now, I just wonder, you know, if AIDS had suddenly existed a few hundred years ago, how in the world would we have dealt with it? You know, we wouldn't have had the technology at all. What would have happened?
I read an interesting article in a newspaper. It said that AIDS was spread. This wasn't by a gossip newspaper. It was a news thing. AIDS was spread, they said, probably by, this is kind of hard to believe, a missile was sent from the USA with half of the AIDS virus to Russia, and we launched the missile to Russia. And that's nothing. But Russia launched a missile, too, with the other half. And they hit together in Africa. And then, you know how Africa is the main thing where it's been spreading?
Yeah.
Well, that's probably why. And someone from Africa came here. It was just a liquid missile.
Now,
that's what I heard. It was kind of hard to believe, but
did they say why the U.S. and Soviet Union would conspire to do this?
Because they hate each other's guts. Just about.
I don't understand. The United States sent half a missile.
No, a whole missile with half the AIDS virus.
Half the AIDS virus to Africa?
To Russia.
To the Soviet Union, okay.
And if you take the halfway point of Russia and the United States, it's going to be Africa. That's probably where it hit and started.
Oh, okay, I get it. So we sent missiles at each other at the same time.
Yeah, they
collided.
Hit each other. And they spread it in Africa.
I'm just thinking if this might in fact be the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life. I think it's way up there. It's in the top five at least.
I know, but
by the end of the night.
Couldn't it be true?
Well, I've heard all kinds of allegations that it was germ warfare and disease research and things like that. I mean, it could very well be something that the CIA was up to or the KGB was up to that got out of hand. That's quite possible.
Unknown questions, though, because you can't, like, it's like another one is how did Adam come to be? You know, Adam and Eve?
Yeah.
How did Adam come to be if he didn't have a mother? You know, no one knows.
Well, that hasn't really bothered me lately, but...
No, I'm saying it's no one will ever know because it's in the past.
It's in the past, but it's also in books, you know, and it's not necessarily the way it happened.
And no one knows about the dinosaurs yet.
Uh-huh.
They haven't come to a conclusion, and I don't think they are going to about this for a couple, maybe 100 years, at least.
Well, there are a lot of mysteries. What killed the dinosaurs? What really killed the dinosaurs? A lot of people still have doubts about that.
Yeah.
But
did you hear about that new movie about with the glow-in-the-dark, you know what? I can't say it over the air.
Okay, well, glow in the...
Starts with C-O-N-D.
Starts with C-O-N-D?
Yeah.
Condoms?
Yeah.
We can say that on
the air. You're allowed to say that over the air?
Yeah, I should hope you're allowed to say that on the air. But what do you mean? A film with glow in... I don't understand.
That new one, they can't even show parts of it because that's all it's about.
It's about condoms.
Yeah, with John Ritter in it. I forgot the name of the movie. It just came out.
You mean... The whole film does nothing but talk about condoms?
Doesn't talk about it. It shows it.
It's an instructional film.
No, it's like an X-rated one.
Oh, an X-rated film?
Yeah.
An X-rated film with condoms. I guess that makes sense.
All it's about.
Well, why do they glow in the dark?
I don't know. That's what it's about. It's a weird movie.
Hmm.
I've never seen it myself, but...
Well, here's my prediction, okay? I don't know whose wise idea it is to make glow-in-the-dark condoms, but I'll bet it may save you from AIDS, but you're probably going to get some kind of horrible disease from using these things with glow-in-the-dark mechanisms on them. I don't know. I'll just keep plunging into more pits. Anyway, thanks for calling, Andrew. We're going to take some more calls.
I have one more thing.
Yeah.
You know what a big fan I am of Morton Downey Jr., right?
Yeah.
And you know what a big fan I am of wrestling, right?
Yeah.
Well, they're just about to be combined. On April the 2nd, Morton Downey Jr. will be at WrestleMania 5 debating.
That's going to be something to jot down in the history books.
Yep. All right, bye.
Bye. Morton Downey, boy. The mere thought. Well, it's 6 minutes after 11 o'clock. You're tuned to Brain Damage here on WUSB in Stony Brook. This is Eric Corley with you up until midnight, and we're taking your calls... discussing all kinds of things about AIDS, world events. We'll talk more about the strike, I guess, in a little while. 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Andrew Goldberger smokes crack.
Now what do? Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Good evening, Eric.
Good evening, caller.
Now, let's get down to business. You know I called you last week about the pledge drive.
A lot of people called me. I don't know what you said.
I had the idea of the casino.
Casino?
Yes.
Refresh my memory. And for
I
those...
suggested transforming the studio into the casino.
Uh-huh.
Now, I spoke to Dave Fita about it.
Oh, boy.
Okay, don't cut me off yet.
Go ahead.
All right. And he said that basically he laughed in my face when I told him of the idea. And he said that is typical of a college station.
Are you waiting for a response from me?
I am.
Okay. Dave Fita?
Yes.
We agree completely. You're such a wise man. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I was calling about what you had on about AIDS.
Yeah? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from, like, Riverhead.
Uh-huh.
It's like Manitowoc.
Okay.
Can
you turn down your radio a little bit? Getting a little bit of feedback there.
Is that all right?
Yeah, it's fine.
All right.
So what's on your mind?
I don't have AIDS or nothing. But I know an awful lot of people I know recently, they got AIDS.
A lot of people you know?
Yeah. And people I didn't know were queer. I work with these guys, you know. I work out in Bayport.
Uh-huh.
On the South Shore. And it's really getting prevalent. It's just really beyond your imagination. You can't believe it. It's just a lot of people in Long Island that got AIDS.
I don't know what the exact number is. You know, if you look at the number, it doesn't seem to be that big. I mean, it's probably not even 1,000, but what you have to look at is the rate at which it's growing and the amount of misconceptions people have about the disease.
What did that kid say? It came from outer space?
Well, no, there's all kinds of theories, and I put that in double quotes. That particular one, which was really kind of nutso, was that the Soviet Union and the United States both fired missiles simultaneously at each other, and the missiles collided and landed in Africa.
Well, it's a warhead problem, but not in that vein.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's scary. It worries me because even, you know, people just disappearing off the street.
Disappearing off the street, huh?
Oh, when they get sick, they're gone.
Yeah.
I've noticed it. Then you think, you know, you think about yourself and you try to trace your moves.
Well, that's the scary part when you have to try to trace back, you know, and see if, am I at risk? And you realize just what the potential is.
Yeah.
And then, you know, after that, it's just, well, now we're going to become all concerned about this, and all this new morality is going to come marching in, and we'll have to watch every step and be all conscientious, and it's a very unhealthy part of our history, I think.
Yeah, I kind of like, you know, I tell friends of mine, I say, Steve, Brian, Johnny, you know, don't do that, man. You're going to get sick from that.
Uh-huh.
You might get AIDS.
Well, yeah, we'll keep on the alert, okay?
Yeah, man.
632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Eric, have you ever used an overhead projector?
Not recently, no.
Do you think they're the greatest? Do you think it's the greatest invention in the world, the overhead projector?
Well, it's certainly not appreciated enough these days.
I think the overhead projector got me through high school. I mean, without the overhead projector, I mean, I would have never known.
Well,
schoolwork.
You know, when you ever there when the light bulb burns out there?
Yes, yes.
They explode. Why is that?
I don't know, but I think we should have a national day to celebrate the evolution of the overhead projector. What great help it makes for the school teacher, and I mean, I could not make it through high school without the use of the overhead projector. I thought during algebra it was a great aid, and I mean.
Well, what about the special little pens that they use to write on the overhead projectors?
If they used overhead,
you can't get those pens anywhere.
They're film. They got they're water-based pens, I guess.
They have to be, yeah.
Yeah.
Regular pens don't work. I know because I tried.
Water-based.
A lot of trouble for this.
Yeah, I mean the overhead projector was great. Elmer's glue. I mean that is the greatest stuff to sniff. I mean, as you can tell, it caused some brain damage. You get it? To me.
Oh, yes, I get it. That's very clever.
See, I'm looking through my Staples catalog, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they got some great things, like a four-drawer vertical file. They got, wood swivel chair for an executive for only $194.
Oh, there you go. That's a bargain.
They got hanging file folders. That is a great invention.
Hanging file folders.
Yes, have you ever seen them?
No, I've never had the heart to actually see
a hanging folder file.
Yeah.
What is your opinion on the Long Island Railroad? It may strike. It may honor the Eastern.
Well, that's something we're slowly moving into here.
Because I know you are always talking about your travels on the Long Island Railroad.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I can tell you that. Because without trains, people are going to have to drive and take buses, and people hate driving and taking buses if they're used to taking trains.
Have you ever put your fanny on a postal electric postal scale?
No, I haven't.
Measure your fanny?
I'm sorry?
Do you ever put your buns on an electric postal scale?
No, but I imagine that's something you spend some time doing.
Eric.
Yes.
What do you think about fax machines?
Fax machines?
Yes.
They're nice.
What about Stiltskin? Andrew Goldberger, Jim, Dave Vita, the same people call your show. Eric? Eric?
Eric. Hello, Dustin.
Andrew Goldberger. Hello?
He's now on hold. What do you do with people like that? 632-6901. Good evening. You're on brain damage.
Evening, Mr. Corley.
Good evening.
This is Stoltzkin.
Okay, how are you?
I'm pretty good.
What's up?
I'd have to rate my favorite invention as the vial. It can be used for storage and crack.
Good evening. You're on brain damage.
Oh, good. I'm on. Wait. Is there, are you getting feedback?
No feedback.
That's good. Ah, got my bass round by. Okay.
There we go. Here's some feedback.
Okay, let me turn down the radio. Sorry.
That was my feedback, though.
Oh, that was your feedback?
Yeah.
Hear that?
That's not feedback. It's a sitar.
I know. It's a sitar in the background. I'm sitting here playing my sitar. Actually, no, that's Ravi Shankar.
Ravi Shankar's there. Put him on. Put him on. I want to hear from him.
Hello. Actually, wait. I could put him on, couldn't I? Let me rewind this. Okay. Anyway, while he's rewinding. So, wow. AIDS. Big, big, big topic. But it's been big for, what, 8 years? You know what I think it is?
What's that?
I think that someplace, in some, like, pathologist lab that they have on these islands, you know, like, they have one, Plum Island.
Uh-huh, right, Animal Research Lab.
Animal Research, you know, where they test out viruses and whatever, create viruses. I think that's what AIDS is.
Trade viruses?
Create.
Oh, I thought you said trade, okay.
Where they create viruses. I think that's what it is. I think.
Well, I mean, I don't know how you can dismiss the possibility. If, you know, it sounds far-fetched. I mean, this rocket business, I don't go for that. But
I think it could be
man-made. Sure, it could, but that doesn't lessen the impact of what it is. It's still a major problem, unless there's a solution hanging around someplace and no one's gotten around to digging it up.
Of course, we've got the Puritan morals that we have grown 300 years ago, trying to come back and take us over. And
right, well, and that's doing nothing to help those of us that are concerned with it, because it's fostering all kinds of suspicion. What if it is some kind of government plot? You know, we actually have people walking around saying that the government is plotting to kill all these people and has the solution to the AIDS problem, but isn't releasing it, isn't moving at all to help conquer this disease. That kind of...
are precise melody forms.
What's this?
That's Ravi Shankar. You want to hear him?
Oh, okay. He speaks on the record.
Wait just a second. Here it goes.
Nor is it a mode.
That's Ravi Shankar. This is an introduction to Indian music that he gives.
Well, tune into Indie Hour tomorrow night.
Yeah, but Ravi Shankar is good.
Yeah, he's okay.
I like him. I also have a tape of whale songs hanging around here somewhere. Songs of the humpback whale. Anyway, so, go on. Talk about... What else is there to talk about? There's lots of things to talk about.
Well, that's true, but we're not talking about them. We're talking about this.
Yes, well, what about the strike?
The strike looks like it might happen. We'll check the teletype and see if anything new has come over, but it looks like the strike is there's a good chance of it. And it's great because you have these surprise strikes. You know, you think you're okay. You think everything's settled. And all of a sudden, Eastern Airlines goes on a strike and the trains don't run. You explain that to me. Doesn't make any sense.
Have you heard the new Lou Reed album?
No, I have not. You certainly don't seem to be able to stick to a subject.
I'm sorry. I just like to ramble. I'm a rambling kind of guy.
Uh-huh.
Rambling. Anyway, they have like this really inflammatory song in there, like completely against, what's his name, Jesse Jackson.
Uh-huh.
Very inflammatory.
How so?
It's just talking about, it's comparing him to Hitler and stuff like that. Here, let's see, what does it say here? It's called Good Evening, Mr. Waldheim.
Mr. Waldheim?
Yeah, it says, and here comes Jesse Jackson, he talks of common ground, does that common ground include me? Or is it just a sound that shakes, oh Jesse, you must watch the sound you make, a sound that quakes. There are fears that reverberate, Jesse, you say, common ground, does that include the PLO? What about people right here now, who fought for you not so long ago? The words that flow so freely, falling, dancing from your lips. I hope that you don't cheapen them with the racist flip. Oh, common ground is common ground, a word or just a sound. Common ground. Remember those civil rights workers buried in the ground. If I ran for president and was once the member of a clan, wouldn't you call on me? It the way I call on you. I call you on Farrakhan. So.
I never knew he was that.
Yeah, neither did I.
Wow, that's something. Lou Reed, huh?
Lou Reed.
Interesting. I wonder who he voted for.
Hmm.
We're going to go to some more calls.
Au revoir.
All right. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I was wondering, why do you talk to those goofy guys? Those crazy guys like that guy.
Well, I wouldn't talk to goofy guys if more regular people would call up. So this is an appeal to all the regular people to call up now and tie up the line. 632-6901. Are you a regular person?
Yeah.
Okay, let's hear a regular view then.
I'm sitting home now.
Uh-huh.
Sitting home. I live all around Conkema.
Okay.
And there's nothing on the TV.
Well, that's not unusual.
I turn on the radio and I hear your show.
Okay.
And you're talking about homosexuals all the time.
Well, we haven't talked about AIDS in months. Not since last year, I don't think.
I mean, all night. That's all you're talking about. You know, I don't know nobody's got that.
Yeah, and?
Well, isn't it kind of blown out of proportion?
Just because you don't know anybody?
Well,
tell me something. Tell me something, sir.
Someday.
Sir, how many Chinese people do you know?
I don't know. Well, I know one Chinese.
You know one Chinese person?
Yeah. Name's Tom.
And there's a couple of billion of them on the planet, am I not correct? So you not knowing people with AIDS doesn't mean that there's no problem.
Good. It just seems like it's a blown out of proportion, just like the flu vaccine in the 70s.
Well, that was something else. But that at least was solvable, you know. Some people died as a result of that, but...
You can't read any of that. You can't believe any of that stuff you read in the papers, because it's all lying.
To a degree, yeah. But that can work, you know, against you as well as for you.
What are you having a show about AIDS then for, if everything is just lying?
Well, everything can't be a lie.
Oh,
some truth is going to filter through.
I mean, the AIDS stuff, that's just like it's in the heterosexuals.
Yeah.
I don't know any heterosexuals that got it.
Well, I hate to say it, but in 5 years you probably will.
Well, that's what they keep telling me, but I don't know. I'm waiting.
You're waiting? Well, I hope you're being careful, too, and I hope you're telling your friends to be careful.
I have no friends that do that.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, then you're okay.
If they do that, they wouldn't admit it.
Do what?
You know that unsafe sex or whatever that what they I don't know what they call it, but I can't say that on the radio.
Uh-huh. Well, it's not just limited to any one group of person.
I don't know.
Or any one nationality.
No, it's limited to those corn cob pokers.
Right. Okay, well, thanks for calling. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Oh, hi. I know how you hate anybody to call twice.
Oh, well, in this particular case, I welcome it.
I can't help it. What in the world, Mr. Radio, do overhead projectors have to do with what Eric's talking about? You're trying to talk about a serious subject, and you got all these meatballs calling up saying the most irrelevant things.
But... they're illustrating much more dramatically than I ever could what the real problem is. The real problem is that Americans have difficulty facing what's going on, both in the rest of the world and in their own backyards. And they'd much rather talk about overhead projectors and what's on TV tonight and, you know, new records that they have and that kind of thing.
I would love to just hear somebody call up who's done any reading at all. I've read a lot about the virus already, but the thing is, it's hard to remember everything you've read. But the young guy who called, at least he's learned about it in school, which is great, but he made one little mistake. He mentioned the virus as being a cell, which it's not. It's a piece of DNA with a transcriptase in it that reads the DNA inside of it. What it does is it goes in a cell and manufactures itself and makes a bunch more of itself is really what it does. That thing with the satellites or whatever smashing in the middle of the atmosphere. I mean, if anybody did any research who called up tonight would know that the AIDS virus is related to a virus that's already been around for a long time. It's a variation of a leukemia virus, and it's also related to a virus that exists in a monkey, and I don't know which part of the world this monkey comes from, but the monkey is immune to it, and they're trying to figure out why the virus does not affect the monkey and kill it.
so it's not an out-of-space thing. It's been around for a while. It's mutated and gotten into all population. It's no big KGB thing or FBI thing. It's just nature at work. So I'll go.
Well, that sounds plausible enough.
But some of these people should get some information. Some of the things these people say on the air, I don't know where and what. You know, they're just... It's like mass hysteria, some of the things I hear, or it's sensationalism. It's like, it's a shame. You got a tough job, Eric. I can't believe that you volunteered to do this. It's a lot of fun, but I don't know how you can sit there and take some of these calls. You got a lot of, I don't know.
People need to speak out, you know, and we need to hear what's on their minds. If it's disturbing, if what's on their minds is disturbing, then that's then we've learned something, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Well, you got a tough job. Let me go. Give these other people a chance.
Okay.
Had the call to find out, you know, what in the world are these overhead projectors or anything have to do with what you're talking about? Oh, well.
Well, we'll find out in the ultimate judgment day, I guess.
Okay, good night.
Thanks for calling. 632-6901, 24 minutes after 11 o'clock. You're listening to Brain Damage here on 90.1 FM WUSB. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Oh, yeah, can I play a musical piece that I wrote?
Maybe later, thank you. It's not a music show. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Yes, this is Hop Singh from Ho Ho Kitchen, the maitre d'. I would like to invite you, Lister, you and Lo, Mike Giorato, and Charlie Backfish, to a tea for the PTA and the Sunshine Girls. Hazel will be here. It will be at the Ho Ho Kitchen. Would you like a pork?
No, thank you. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
Okay, I just tuned in a few minutes ago, and what is up with that ignoramus? He called up, and he's saying how none of his friends have AIDS, so there's no problem. I couldn't believe it when I heard that.
Well, that's, I would have to say, I don't know if he was being serious or not, but I would have to say whether people actually come out and voice those remarks, that's a very common view.
I mean, that's just so ignorant. This is one of the most threatening things happening to our society today in the recent past.
Okay, now people have been asking me tonight, why is it such a threat if I don't know people that are dying of it? And I'll ask you the same question. Why is it such a threat then?
Because at the rate it's spreading, it will affect a majority of the people soon. And even if the only 10 people in the United States are affected, it's still a tragedy. Have you seen what happens to a person that gets AIDS? What they begin to look like after they start to emaciate? Right? That's the right word.
Well, yeah, I know what you mean, if it's not. But yes, you know, you watch the shows on TV. There's a program on, I haven't seen it yet. I taped it called AIDS Quarterly on PBS last week, which is supposed to come out four times a year and show what progress, if any, is being made and how it affects certain people with the disease. And, you know, that kind of thing should be shown in schools, obviously. You should know what's happening to people.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, last year when they did that AIDS Prevention Week in the high schools, they showed a Donahue show where he went and visited people who had AIDS. And just looking at the people, it was terrible what happens to them. They can't sit up in bed. They can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's easy to dismiss it all when you don't know the people. But these are all human beings, just like the 50 million people in Africa. They're all human beings. They all have thoughts, emotions, and they're all unique in some way. It's a bigger tragedy, I think, than the disease itself to be just have the callousness to dismiss it all. You know, and that's the major problem. We don't see that this is a valid concern, a major tragedy. Anyway, our phone number is 632-6901, area code 516. And I'll take a couple more calls on this, and we'll go into some strike news. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
What? Walker?
Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was calling up. I heard you were talking about AIDS.
Yeah.
And I live in, I'm out here on the island.
Uh-huh.
In Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn?
Yeah.
You can get us in Brooklyn?
What?
You can get us in Brooklyn, huh?
Yeah. Sure, I get out of there.
Okay.
But anyway.
What do you have to say?
It's like, yeah.
Sorry about that. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hello?
Having some difficulty with the phones here. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
This is Mr. Radio.
Definitely difficulty with the phones. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hi, I have to say something in defense of that guy that you were, the tape that you played before.
Yeah?
Because everybody seems to think he's very callous and everything, but he's been watching what's been happening in Africa, and he's just talking about the fact that this virus and other natural occurrences that happen to people is just something that happens in the natural history of human beings and other every other species of animal. And it's to be expected almost that people should be dying, and if this doesn't happen, then we do become overpopulated, which is a state that we are in now. He's not really being callous about it. He's just talking about nature, basically. He's not saying what is it? He seems to think nature is God, and that's what he means by the fact that God is it's something from God. It's not that we're being punished. It's just something that happens.
Uh-huh. Well, I can accept that viewpoint, but where does he go from there? What's the way of handling it? Do you just sit back and let nature take its course, or do you attempt to find a solution?
Well, I'm not sure what he thinks to do, because he really didn't seem... I really had an answer for even the poaching and things that are happening in Africa due to the overpopulation of people, too. What are you going to do, thin out the human population and blow them away? But it's just something that he is just perceives and is telling other people about, really.
Well, you know, no one's going to deny that overpopulation is a problem. We can say that AIDS is something that nature has concocted to help control the population. We can also say that nature has concocted this to sharpen our minds and help us figure out something and make a step for mankind and be ready for the next puzzle when it comes along.
But still, we put our intelligence to the wrong things, though. The smarter we become, the more problems we set up for ourselves and the more widespread they become in destroying the planet. I don't think he's trying to scare people and telling people what's happening with this planet. It is an organism,
mm-hmm.
because it's been... The more intelligent we become, the more destructive we are to our environment.
Yeah, I think that's something that...
I think that's what he was trying to say, really.
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't disagree with everything he said, but I just, you know, I focused on that particular part because it seemed to sum up a lot of feelings that are present not only in South Africa, but all over the place.
Well, you know, a lot of people seem to be attacking him about that one aspect. I just wanted
well,
to
it's
say
just
something.
when you start speaking of people in that way, you know, these millions of people that, are going to have to be sacrificed because they really don't belong here in some form.
That's what's happening to the animals, too, and there really isn't much of a distinction between humans and animals. You know, elephants display a lot of human characteristics. They mourn their dead, and there's incidents where they play around or pick up and hold the pieces of skeletons of dead elephants in their past, and they go through mourning of dying elephants and dead elephants. They're very feeling creatures, and they're being wiped out. It's a very severe problem in Africa. And it's not only elephants, it's whales and every other type of animal that's being wiped out, and they're not overpopulated. It's the humans that are overpopulated and wiping them out, you know, and he faces this every day.
Right, but the humans that are doing the most damage, are they the ones that are dying? I don't think they are. I think they're the ones that are surviving.
Right, well, you know, but what I'm saying is that he seems callous towards the humans only because the humans are just as callous, or he has to be that callous in addressing the issue of everything else that's being wiped out or every other species that's being wiped out on the planet.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand the feeling. I do understand what his feeling. I can't agree with that approach. That's all I was saying.
No, I was just perhaps relating another side of the story, what could be going on in the man's mind, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't hear any calls that were really on his side or trying to describe his opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much, and I want to say hello to Mr. Radio, if he's still alive, or if he feels like calling in a few hundred times more.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 632-6901. That's our telephone number. And boy, are we in trouble now. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
I'm fed up with Andrew Goldberger. I'm fed up with this man.
You can be fed up somewhere else. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Joe Fox is a queer.
Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello?
Yes.
I am calling about the AIDS.
Okay.
And I have heard very many, very disparaging things about it.
Okay.
And very, not understandable problems with the craziness about the causes of it, of the AIDS. The boy that spoke of the spaceships bringing it.
Well, missiles, yes.
I do not understand. I never heard that one before. That's crazy.
Well, don't worry about it. Hopefully you won't hear it again.
That's not where you would get it.
No, it's, you know, no matter what the actual cause, it's irrelevant at this point. It exists. It's real. A lot of people don't seem to think it's real. It is. It's affecting people left and right. That's really all you have to know.
I agree.
The next question is, how do we deal with it? How do we send money to solve this problem or to attempt to solve this problem? That's the kind of thing we should be worrying about now and not this crazy spaceship business.
You expect money?
Well, you know, I think that's... money should come from all the governments of the world instead of, you know, like the United States pouring money into defense and all kinds of other wasteful things.
Anthony, we are the government.
Exactly. That's a very good point.
And so we should give our money directly or let the government hand it to them for us.
Mm-hmm.
But which?
Which? Well, I think both would be probably a good solution. I mean, if you have money to send to research foundations, then you certainly should do that as a member of this planet. And same thing goes for governments.
Could I leave your audience with the warning on the package?
With a warning on a package?
Well, it's just a warning.
Okay, go ahead.
It's an AIDS warning, and everyone should be aware of it. Don't do that.
Okay. Thanks very much. 632-6901. Maybe that could be the theme of the 80s. Don't do that. Okay. Going to be dictatorial here. No more calls about AIDS. We're finished talking about that tonight. I don't want to leave here depressed. I think we addressed it, we focused on it, and we realize it's a problem. Do yourself a favor, learn more about it. Now, let's talk about something else that's imminent. Striking Eastern Airlines workers paralyzed the financially strapped carrier today, overwhelming management efforts to run a skeleton schedule, and vowing to incite mass transit chaos when the work week starts. Eastern managers thought they had prepared for the strike by hiring non-unionists and slashing the weekend schedule by up to 75%, but when most pilots and flight attendants honored the machinist lines, it threw the company's strike battle plan into disarray. Eastern said it was able to offer 85 flights today. That compared with Eastern's goal of about 260 Saturday flights under its weekend contingency plan and with about 1,000 flights under a normal Saturday schedule. Okay. Not sure if all those 85 flights got off the air, by the way. Got up in the air. It's up to question. Now, as a public service to our listeners and non-listeners alike, we have gotten out the phone book. And we are going to actually find out what's really going on. Okay. We need to know about what's happening with all this Eastern business. So we're calling up Eastern Airlines themselves. Just as a beleaguered commuter might. And we're going to find out just what in blazes is going on if we don't get a busy signal.
line, Miss Pettit?
Yes, hi. I'm a beleaguered commuter, and I'm trying to figure out what's going on with the strike. Can you possibly tell me the latest?
What's your flight number, sir?
Well, that's just it. I don't have a flight number. I'm making reservations this coming week, but I need to know how bad this is, because maybe I'll go by train or something.
Well, right now it's pretty bad, but we're expecting it to get better before the week is out. I mean, we can't predict anything right now. We're on a 48-hour advance schedule basis, which means today we'll know what's happening Monday, tomorrow we'll know what's happening Tuesday, you know.
I see. Well, can you give me an idea of what's happening tomorrow?
Right now, almost every flight that we offer has been canceled.
Oh, dear. So what are you telling people to do? If I did have a flight scheduled for tomorrow, what would I do?
If you did, you'd be protected on another carrier.
Okay, and who would handle that?
Well, we would, but if you're not having a ticket, sir, it doesn't matter.
No, I'm just wondering, if I do buy a ticket, the day will come when I have to face this problem. I just want to know how...
We will book that for you. You call us the 48 hours in advance, and then we'll book you on the other carrier if your flight has been canceled.
Okay. Now, you're not about to go out and strike yourself, are you?
No, sir. We're not union.
Oh, you're not union. Okay. Well, that's... okay. I guess that answers all my questions, then.
All righty.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Good luck. They hire non-union people to answer the phone. That's an interesting fact there. Okay, now, next step. More immediate are the trains, of course. Let's find out what's going on with the trains. Boy, they have a lot of phone numbers. Which one is the right one? Those aren't the right numbers. Those are old numbers. Those are old numbers, I'm telling you. Okay, well, I'll call them anyway. No, those are old numbers. Here we go. I thought it was an old number. Long Island Railroad has a tradition of, after a lot of rings, picking up and giving you a recording and leaving you on for a very long time. That's going to change next year, I understand, or this year. It's going to get one of those computers where you dial one for this, dial two for that. So instead of being on hold, we'll be punching buttons. This number is garbage. It's no good at all. Let's try another one. Fortunately, they have more than one. I still don't think these numbers are right. Calling the Long Island Railroad to find out if a strike is imminent in their opinion. I always get recordings when I call them, and I don't seem to be getting anything now. Imagine if I was really... Well, wait a minute, I am. I take the trains.
If I might interject, when is the strike supposed to begin?
I believe... Strike is scheduled to begin first thing Monday morning, but that's what I want to find out. When's it going to begin, you know? What do we do? Oh, this is horrible. Okay, I'm going to try this number here. I think that's the right number. No, it's... See, I thought they all spelled L-I-R-R, the last part of them. That's why they're special numbers. These ones are ending in 00, and they don't spell anything. I'm going to try this one now. Getting absolutely nowhere with this. Ah, here we go.
The number you have reached, 293-3558.
Wait a minute. That's not Long Island Railroad. That's Long Island RV Service Incorporated. What the hell is that? That's not it.
These guys don't answer at all.
The regular train stations never answer.
No.
Here it is. That's the number. See, that's 5477. It spells L-I-R-R. That's definitely it. I can't believe they don't put a recording on the old numbers telling you that they have a new number instead of just let it ring.
I said that.
Oh my goodness. Yes, hi. I'm curious as to what the status is with the strike.
So am I.
What should I do come Monday?
All right, sir. All I can say is listen to the television and the radio. I don't have anything else to tell you.
I'm on the radio.
Same boat you are.
Okay. You haven't heard anything then? You don't have any inside scoop or anything like that?
No, sir.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
That's
funny. She doesn't sound very happy. Listen to the radio. I've got my headphones on, but I don't hear anything. Okay. So, let's backtrack. See what's going on with this story. Is anything new on the telepath, maybe?
Well, I can check.
Well, okay, I'll read this story about the federal judge reserving judgment. Yes, this federal judge reserved judgment on whether to issue an order blocking sympathy strikes by by workers on the trains. How's that? I can't say that. Ready to honor Eastern Airlines machinist picket lines. I still don't understand this. I still don't understand what train workers have to do with plane workers. U.S. District Court Judge Robert Patterson at 9:30 p.m. told lawyers for the Metropolitan Commuter Rail Lines and striking machinists that he would not make a decision tonight. Probably because the Golden Girls is on or something. No, he did it at 9:30. That was after it was over. Okay. New Jersey Transit and the Metropolitan Transportation Authority. Maybe he was wanting to listen to this show. Who knows? Half an hour before we began. Okay, well, if you're out there, we respect your right not to pass judgment on anything. New Jersey Transit and the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, the parent company for the Long Island Railroad and Metro North, had asked the judge to stop their workers from holding a sympathy strike Monday morning. Such a strike would paralyze the metropolitan area. The judge advised the lawyers to come back tomorrow sometime after 10 a.m. to discuss the case further. Okay, now I have a question. I have a very important question here. Let's see, how do I approach this? Okay, I want to know why the subways aren't being affected by this. They're run by Metropolitan Transit Authority, just like the regular trains are. Okay, here's what we do. We will dial the information operator. Hopefully he isn't on strike. Hi. I need the number, the 24-hour number for the MTA subway information. Thank you. Oh, music. Isn't that?
Yeah, New York City Transit Authority, subway and bus terminal. Please hold.
The number is area code 718-330-1234.
Okay. Uh-oh. It's an ominous sound. Okay, here we go. Because if the subways are affected by this, we're talking anarchy in the streets.
Nothing new. I heard about the subways on another radio station.
What did you hear about the subways?
I heard the subways might be out, too.
The subways might be out?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy, this is going to be great.
People calling the Travel Information Bureau. Uh-oh. All of our representatives are busy at this time. Please be prepared to give your location and destination.
That's
have a pencil and paper ready to record the information. In order to serve you better, please notify the representative as to your desired means of transportation via bus or subway. Please hold on for the next available agent.
This is the subway information. This isn't the Long Island Railroad.
What does the subway say about your final destination?
Well, this is the number you call if, say, you're at Conduit Avenue in Brooklyn and you want to get to, to Sutphin Boulevard in Queens.
I didn't think that was travel information.
They say, oh, this is what you do. You take the H train and go over to here and take the Z and all that kind of thing. Of course, you have to wait a very long time to find out, and usually by that time you found an alternate means of travel. Okay, well, we're going to keep them on hold while we look at this. This is the latest news. Eastern Airlines says 85 of its flights took off today, far short of the 260 it had hoped for in the wake of a machinist union strike. Okay. Transportation Secretary Samuel Skinner. That's new. I didn't even know who this guy was.
Remember, do not attempt to board or leave subway trains while the doors are closing. Ride safe. A message from the Transit Authority.
We appreciate
that. Please hold for the next available agent. This will be your last recorded message.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. Don't interrupt the news anymore. Transportation Secretary Samuel Skinner says the Bush administration won't allow striking Eastern employees to broaden their protest to the point that American industry is shut down. Ooh, that sounds frightening. Skinner, interviewed on CNN, which is at this point unaffected by the strike, said the administration would seek emergency legislation in the event of a secondary boycott. This is a scary story, what I'm about to read here.
Isn't this
scary story. Time Incorporated and Warner Communications have agreed to merge into an $18 billion company that would be the world's largest media and entertainment empire, and a good deal bigger than quite a few countries.
That's scary.
The companies did not give a timetable for completion of the deal, and apparently nobody can do anything about it now either. Boy, Time Incorporated and Warner Communications, all as one.
They have, like, everything in there now. They have TV, radio, movies, radio.
What more do they want? The Los Angeles Times is out with a poll which found that 44% of 1,000 adults interviewed believe that the Senate should reject the nomination of John Tower as defense secretary. 35% expressed the view he should be confirmed. And the other however many percent said he should be shot or something like that. Who knows? We're still on hold with the MTA. No doubt they have their hands full. Authorities in London? Okay, authorities in London say at least 5 people were killed, at least 80 others injured when a passenger train rear-ended another train today. Why do you want me to read a story like that?
They're having a bed in London, in England.
Trains are always colliding with
trains
each other.
Planes
over there.
Just
yeah. Let's see here. Nothing else I can... What do you do when you get put on hold for so long? Well,
I have a question for
you. We're saving all our listeners the trouble of being on hold for this long. We're doing it for them.
I have a question for you.
Yeah, what's that?
How can the airline hire new people to do technician jobs and machinist jobs?
I don't know.
I mean, how well do these people know the airplane?
More important, what are those people doing now? Why aren't they being technicians now if they're trained to be technicians?
Well, that's because they're unemployed. But how can they just hire
them? Hiring the people that they laid off last year.
Is that what they're doing?
I don't know. Maybe that's what they're doing.
That they can just come in and they know what they're doing with Eastern Plains.
I don't. Well, we can't get those people on the phone, unfortunately.
That's scary, if you think about it.
Well, the whole thing is pretty scary. That's why I think a strike is fun, because this whole travel business is scary to start with. But any word on the USB engineers?
I hear they're picketing out there.
Picketing? Well, let's jump the gun a bit. I guess, you know.
Never mind. No, the rumor has it we're all going on strike starting midnight.
Midnight tonight or midnight Monday?
Midnight tonight.
Oh, great.
It's on Monday. It's not like we're 9 to 5, Monday through Friday kind of
thing.
Well,
how come Eastern Airlines went on strike midnight last night, but the MTA won't go on strike until midnight Monday?
I don't know. Ask them that.
That's, if they ever answer the phone, I will ask them that.
Do they have your music?
This is ridiculous.
Yeah, do they have music?
No, they don't have music. They just have, like, this steady buzzing drone.
Probably.
I'm about to give up in disgust, which is what you might note that 65% of the people who call this number give up in disgust.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I can't imagine being in a subway and needing information.
No, you don't call it from inside the subway. You call it from...
A payphone.
From a payphone in
right,
a subway
station.
I can't
imagine putting money in the payphone while you're on hold, waiting for directions.
Oh, yeah, can you imagine that? My quarter would have run out by now.
Yeah. Probably so.
I don't know what to do here.
Put them on hold and get someone's call.
Yeah, but then I don't know if they picked up. They probably will pick up.
And they deserve to be picked.
True, but we won't get our questions answered. Now, maybe there's somebody else that knows the answer to the question. Who else would know?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't have paper.
This is... We don't know what to tell you, folks. Well, I guess not too many of our listeners will be taking subways anyway, but I take subways. I like to know these things.
Why not?
And buses, too.
I was going to go.
Subways and buses. Do you think the Suffolk County buses are going to be affected?
I don't know. I honestly don't understand what the subway has to do with Eastern Airlines.
I don't understand that either. And no one is doing a very good job explaining it to me. All I can say is come Monday, we're in for a lot of fun.
Yeah.
All right, I'll put them on hold. We'll come back to them. See if anybody wants to call in. 632-6901, what are you going to do for the strike? We have 7 minutes to talk about it, so let's get some intelligent calls for a change. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Yeah, I'm calling about the railroad strike. The proposed railroad strike.
Yeah, the proposed railroad strike, you got it.
What I'm going to do if there's a strike, I'm not even going to go to work.
You're just not going to go?
No.
Well, that's, are you self-employed by chance?
No, I work for the telephone company.
The telephone company, huh?
Yeah. And if I can't get to work, it's going to make me miserable getting to work. Well, I'll take a personal day.
You know, I think we should all do that. I really do. I think we should all just say, for one day in our lives, to hell with the whole system, you know? Nobody goes to work. Nobody does anything. We just, you know, just call a holiday and
those commie French do it.
They have a nationwide strike. Yeah.
Everybody strikes. Housewives strike. I mean, what do they got to strike about? Television?
Well, I think the housewives have quite a bit to strike about, actually, but...
TV all day long. They sit on their keisters.
Well, now, before this gets violent, I'm going to go back to the MTA here. Looks like we're still on buzz hold. But he did raise a very important point. Let me just see if this is an issue here. The phone company. Do you think the phone company is affected by this?
Well, if he won't go to work and other people like him won't, yes.
New York telephone, Miss White, may I help you?
Yes, hi. I just heard a rumor that the phone company is going to be affected by this strike.
What strike, sir?
The airline MTA strike?
I have no idea. I've heard nothing.
You haven't heard anything. Okay, could you connect me to AT&T, please?
Dolly, hold on, please.
Thank you. Maybe AT&T knows about these things sometimes.
One moment for an operator who can assist you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Is that the same woman?
No, that's a recording.
I know. Hi,
is this AT&T?
Yes.
Hi, I heard a rumor that the phone company is going to be affected by the Eastern Airlines strike. Is that true?
No.
Not true at all?
No.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm very relieved. Okay. How do you like that? They picked up and they hung up. While we were talking to the operator, the MTA picked up and hung up.
Well, at least you now know that the phone will not...
Oh, now we know that they pick up the phone. Great, but we don't have any information. Except to say that the phone company definitely is not affected by this.
Well, okay. What I meant to say is the person who said, please hold,
uh-huh.
Is that the same woman for all the recordings?
She shows up in a lot of recordings, yes.
Is it a person or is it a computer?
It's a person who lives in Pennsylvania.
Really?
Yeah. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello, Eric.
Yeah.
I've been listening to your show.
Uh-huh.
And I could give you a little insight as to what's going on because I'm a railroad employee.
Oh, great. That's just what we need then.
Yeah. The only thing that's going to happen is we're going to honor their picket line. You say, well, I'll throw up a picket line and then we won't cross it, you know, when we go to work.
Okay, now let me just ask a question that's on everybody's minds. How does the Eastern Airline picketers enter into trains?
That I can't answer because I don't even know. I wasn't even told anything by it or about it.
Okay, but you say you won't cross their picket line, but where is their picket line going to come into, the Long Island Railroad?
Picket all the major facilities.
So Eastern Airlines, where are they picketing?
They'll picket Hillside, Jamaica, maybe Babylon, you know, Hicksville, Maine headquarters, stuff like that.
I see. See, I didn't know there was a relation between all of this.
I didn't either, but it just seems to be there's a national labor movement on.
Is this something new or something unprecedented in this country?
It seems to be something new as far as I'm concerned, sure. The working man's just taking a loss on everything that he does. You know, he goes to work and he's taxed heavily, and I don't have to tell you, the cost of living on Long Island's pretty expensive. You know.
Uh-huh. Now, they say this is going to affect the Northeast more than any other part of the country. Do you have any idea why?
It's major population lives here, you know.
But are rail lines across the country being affected, too?
They're supposed to be, from what I understand.
Do you know if Amtrak is affected?
Amtrak, Metro North, Long Island Railroad, I think even past New Jersey. But the Transit Authority, I don't know if it is because they fall under the Taylor Law, which is the can't strike, public employees can't strike, and they've been trying to get us under that for the last 10 years or so.
But they did go on strike a few years ago, didn't they? About maybe, 8 years ago, 10 years ago?
Yeah, about 10 years ago. But then they lost 2 days' pay for each day out.
Uh-huh.
You know, they lost a lot of money.
Hmm. So come Monday... Has anyone told you what to do yet?
Yeah, I'll go to work, and if there's a picket line up, I have to honor it.
Okay.
But, you know, it's up to them, you know, the airline employees, you know, what they're going to make out of it.
Uh-huh. What do you do for the railroad?
I work on the third rail.
You work on the third rail, huh?
Right.
just all over the place?
Yeah, we travel all over the island. It's a different kind of job.
I see guys working on the third rail, and I'm always curious because I see them walking so close to it. How can you do that?
You have to, you know.
But
to be careful.
That's what I'm asking. How are you careful? If you just brush against it, you get electrocuted, don't you?
No, you can touch it. You just can't be grounded, that's all. Now, you can't ground yourself than running around the third rail at the same time, you know, otherwise you'll get it.
Well, when you say you can touch it, give me an example.
Well, you can stand on a railroad tie and touch it. Don't do it when it's wet out. But you can just stand on a tie and touch the third rail and you'll be fine.
All right, you mean the wood?
Right, you stand on the wood.
Well, certainly we don't advise anyone to even consider doing that.
No, I wouldn't say anybody to do
that.
You've got to know what you're doing.
Yeah, I leave that to the railroad employees. Well, I wish you luck, and maybe if this has really gone into chaos next week, you'll give us another call and tell us what's going on.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Okay.
Okay, nice talking to you.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Before we leave, we'll make one more call to Amtrak. Completely forgot about them. If they're affected, then it's really going to be chaos. That's for sure. Trains all over the country. How come other airlines aren't honoring it? That's what I want to know. Shouldn't machinists from different airlines also be honoring this?
Amtrak reservation, Ms. Sozak speaking.
Came on there, son. Yes, hi. I was wondering if Amtrak is affected by the strike?
Well, no more than what you've heard on the news.
Okay, I heard the Long Island Railroad would be affected. I didn't hear anything about Amtrak. Do you think it's possible?
It's possible.
Okay. All right, so I'll keep that in mind then.
All righty.
Thank you.
Bye.
Greyhound buses. Does anybody know about those? I don't know. Well,
does anyone know what the issues are?
Issues? Issues?
Oh, the strike.
Oh, get a load of the idealist here. Issues.
Well, what are the issues? Why are they striking?
Who cares about the issues? It's a strike. Come on.
Do you know how much do they make? I don't understand what they want, what they don't want.
How much does a what make?
An average machinist. What are the machinists?
What is a machinist?
Everybody who works with machines.
One who works with machines.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I imagine they make a fair amount, but, you know, obviously not fair enough or they wouldn't be going on strike.
I guess so. Well, is it just money? Is it hours?
It's money.
Conditions?
It's hours, conditions.
I'm just wondering.
She was in hours.
It's everything. Well, it's been a lot of fun, folks, as usual. Come to the end of another two-hour period, and the brothers are waiting in the wings. It's 12:01. This is WUSB in Stony Brook. And my name's Eric Corley. I'll be back again next week talking about some other relevant, late-breaking news items and some irrelevant things that don't matter to anybody. And that's really all I have to say. Susan, thanks for coming by and lending your... Well, you can speak into that microphone.
Oh, gee, Eric, thank you for having me on your show.
I guess I should have turned that one on a long time ago. Thanks for coming by. Thanks for all the people that called in, and we'll see you again next week. Good night.
The lunatics are in my hall. The paper holds their folded faces to the floor. And every day the paper boy brings more. The door.